they could some pages long, which helps. And I strongly suggest you print this out. Now, so there's a link, there's a local viewer of the PDF file on the class web page, and I might follow it fairly closely for the first. So we covered the first half of what I am covering for the first month and a half, 2 months of this course, is pretty much this. So I'm gonna use it. And almost like a textbook. It has a few problems and has all the material here, so I'm going to use it. And unfortunately, it's only half of what I plan to cover. I found another set of notes by Ash, which I also put a link on the class webpage, and which is a complete abstract algebra course, and he has stuff for what I'm going to cover in the second half of the semester. I haven't had time to look at it carefully, so I don't know how well it matches with what I want to do. If I decide not, so I might use it, so that's a way of you get having something that you can download and print and look and with all the stuff that I'm going to cover. Otherwise, I might write some notes myself. So if I decide to do it differently, I might just type up some notes and distribute them, put them on the web. You guys can work. But I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I know what I'm doing in the second half of the semester, but I don't know how I'm going to do it. So I'll let you know. Okay, so that's the view of the textbook of the material. Okay, so what's the syllabus? So I kind of assume people have seen Groups and Rings a little bit. Hope everybody, know the definition. I mean, I don't expect you to know the theory well, and I hope, my plan is to cover things in the theory detail, but, I don't want to be repeating it. I mean, I'm going to write down the definition of a group, because I'm going to take some minutes for that. I hope it's seen it before, because I'm not going to spend, two lectures giving so for example, I'll be able to use linear groups right away, and you're not going to be too scared. So we're going to cover groups. So there are two main theorems in groups that two main theorems in groups that we're going to be aiming to is Schiller's theorems about finite groups, which is sort of the first step in the classification of finite groups. And the second is the Jordan-Helder theorem about the filtrations by simple groups. So there's another step in the classification of finite simple groups, or finite groups. And they're also used in the second part in the other theorem. So I'm going to aim at these two theorems, and so this is the finite groups. And then rings, so we're going to cover PIDs, UFDs, Noetherian rings, polynomial rings, and one of the main, and modules of the rings, which modules are two rings of vector spaces are two fields. So we're going to get to that. And one of the result of the aim to is the classification of finitely generated modules of the PIDs, which will give us also the classification of finitely generated binary groups. So that's the plan. What else? So like I said, I hope you've seen a little bit of abstract algebra, so things shouldn't be too scary in the beginning. Okay, exams. So I'm hoping to give a midterm sometime, late October, something like that. So halfway to the course, maybe. point I'm sort of close to finishing group theory. So we said on group theory. And the final is on the, so I haven't set a date for the midterm, I'll wait a couple of weeks and then I'll set a date. The final, I'm going to give the final on the date set by the university. So the university has this thing of setting a date for finals according to the time of the course needs, the schedule, room and everything. So the appointment is 19th of December, so it's kind of late in the exam week. Okay. Sometimes they got courses before they don't give the final on the university, a lot of things. Because they give us, you know, I have a room, I have 3 hours, so no time pressure. The midterm is going to have to be in class. So, and 1 hour is kind of short. And one thing that I want to ask everybody is, does anybody have a conflict right before class? Does anybody teach? Or taking another, I mean, I thought it was being good, yeah. We have a class right before this one. Okay. Well, maybe you can sort of accommodate you, if there's only one person. So, I might schedule the exam to, do you have anything right after? Okay, so we can, Algebra, topology. Okay, but he's the only one that has a problem right after. So everybody else, as far as I understand, doesn't have a problem before. So I could say schedule the midterm to start at 9:30. He would arrive at 10 and stay till 11:30. Okay. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, or 9. I mean, I'll see, depends on how long this is. Okay, so let's end my book. I'll give the details of that. What else? Homework. That's going to be a lot. Yeah. And it's going to be hard, too. And it's going to count as 20% of the grade. But let me explain you why. The primary purpose of this class is to prepare people for the algebra prelim exam, or to give them the opportunity not to take it. But to give people the opportunity not to take it, I have to be sure that you know the stuff. So, and if you're going to take it, you better be sure that you know the stuff. So this course prepares you for the prelim. And the only way to prepare you for the prelim is to lots of problems. And guess what? There are lots of prelim problems. So I'll have you assigning homework from old prelims. So there are lots and lots of old prelims on the web. And I'm just going to say, do Spring 99 problem 3 and Fall 03 problem 2. So that's going to be the homework that's going to be last. Maybe not two problems, maybe four problems. Okay. Depends on how the problems are. But the good news is that I'm not going to be assigning any homework this week. Next one.
Yeah, is the homework, do you assist me assign random days and do random days, or is it going to be sort of like...
Usually be going to be assigning on a Wednesday to study on the following Wednesday. So I'll give a whole week for them. So maybe if I don't assign it on a Wednesday, it's usually going to be a week. You might start on Wednesday just because next Monday is... Go on.
And
so the last thing on the handout is, which is all half, is that the grades are going to be computed 20% homework, 30% midterm, and 50% final. So the homework, the 20% is going to be computed, it's not going to be, average of all the exam, all the homework assignments, I might drop one or two because people, for some reason or other, can't do all the homework. So, but whatever way I complete the homework grade, it's going to count to 20% of the final grade. I don't like to give makeup exams, but first of all, make a separate exam and grade a separate exam is kind of hard. So if there is a problem, somebody has a conflict with the midterm grade, you're going to have to negotiate. Maybe make the final count more.
And what else?
Yeah, that's about it. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes.
Is the final going to be cumulative?
Yes.
Is it going to be essay format?
No, it's going to be just like the homework. It's going to be this problem, just like it's going to look like a printer. That's what the course is.
So I know you guys are not taking it for the year, but you might be going to grad school somewhere else, and then you're going to have to take it for the there. So you'd be ready.
Sure. We're excited about it.
Yeah. Here. a set with a binary operation, start defining 1 and 2, is called a chain. The same group that we make a brief appearance later on when we talk about free groups. If he has 1 or 2, but not necessarily he was 3, then you call it a semi-group. If he has 3, you call it a group.
Yes? Interesting if four definitions of one part being closure, are we just assuming that?
A closure is here. Okay? So, what does closure mean? That if you start with 2 elements in your group, you get, and you operate, then you get in the group. So it's already embedded in here when I'm saying that the operation has to be a function with domain pairs of elements in the set and range target this set. Then implicitly I'm saying if I take 2 elements of S, the value of the operation has to be. So that's lower. Okay? Question of closure becomes more important when we talk about subgroups. So then you want to make sure that when you operate the element in a subgroup is stable. Because then there you are in the context of being inside the element. But right now, all I have is G. So when I write the product of the element is G, I'm assuming that this subgroup is property 0 is the alright. Examples are, G with addition. So sometimes if you write G, if I want to be pedantic, I'm going to write G and some symbols to denote the operation. So a set may have more than one operation. And so if you want to make sure what operation you're talking about, you write it like this. So G with the put operation being addition, so just integer or integer, addition, or any number that you like, complex number. Non-zero real numbers and multiplication. What else? G mod n, C, so if you probably seen that in the theory of number theory, is the quotient of G by integers mod n, with addition again is a group. These are all things, you know, easy to show that they are groups. Here's an important example of a group. So let's X be a set and define SymX, symmetric group on X, which is a set of, so I'll define it first as a set, is a set of functions F from X to X, which are bijective. So that's the same as 1-to-1 and honest. So the functions that have inverse. So have any set whatsoever, and you look at the functions from the set itself that have an inverse of the function, and this set is a group under composition. So define an operation and define an operation. And define an operation on Synx by operation. Circle FOD, which is defined as usual. So this is a compositional function, FOG of X. So this is another function from X to X. And so that's a group.
So how would you check that? So first of all, you know, decompose the function to get a function, and you have to learn some there. It's composition of two bijective functions is bijective. This is very simple to check, right? If you apply the definition, you end up with, you apply f of g to h, to do this, you're going to get f of g to h. Applying f. Clear. The identity is the identity function, so e is the function e of x. Of x for all x. This much. Be careful. Lethal x. And by definition, I'm taking my functions as those that do have an inverse. So, pretty automatically satisfied because of that. Just restricting my attention to heaven. So this is a group, very natural group. It also has the added bonus that C max adds on X. So what does that mean? It means that, you know, given f in cmx and x in x, we have f of x also in x. So given an element of the group and an element of the set, we get a new element of the set. And group actions are important. So when you study group theory, usually, you know, if you're undergraduate class in group theory, you probably have seen very little about group actions, but not at all. But in real life, well, in mathematical real life, usually groups are acting on something, acting on spaces. So, if you have groups of isometries of the plane, so if you look at the transformations on the plane that preserve metric properties. They form a group because it's composed of things that preserve metric properties and also preserve metric properties. But then the group is defined as being a set of functions acting on a space. And a lot of groups in practice arise that way. So they not only you have the operation in the group, which is a kind of composition, and there's an action of the group on a set. And we're going to be using that. So we're going to be using group actions, for example, to prove dual. So that's an important thing in math. The general definition of a group action is just a subgroup of this. So when I talk about subgroups, I'll mention that. The special situation here is when X is the set of first n positive integers, we call with the nodes Cmax by Sn, which is called the symmetric group on n max. Symmetric group. Okay, so, and that's the group that we're going to be in. Functions is not necessarily
Okay, so this is sort of the perfect example, not community groups. Although community groups are common enough so that they get a name. So G has a property that G is a G-ing for G, let's say G is a G-ing. Usually talk about opinion groups and community friends. Later on when we have a radio, which is a set of two operations. The one is going to help the community that the other one might or might not, and then we want the second one is community group. Community friends. So groups is the traditional way of being. Another example of groups, which is very important, and hopefully we'll see more of them in a while, is linear groups of groups of linear groups. So let me start with the real numbers. So let V be a vector space over R. So say, for example, Rn, space of multivariable calculus, n doubles of real numbers. And vectors, you don't have to add vectors, you don't have to multiply vectors together. So V itself is a group of their additions. So the vector space, what is a vector space? A vector space is a group with addition and an extra operation, which is multiplication by scalars. So we're seeing some modules are going to be generalization of vector space, but we're not going to get the modules right now. But I want to look at GLV, the linear group on G. So I'm going to define a group. It's a set of F from G to V bijective and linear. So I'm going to look at functions from this vector space itself that are bijective in that sense, so they have an inverse of the function, and are linear. So what does that mean? It means that F of lambda x plus dy is linear in the sense of linear arguments. So for all x, y, and z and lambda u in R. So that's what a linear function is, to preserve the properties of the vector. And when G is Rn, we also denote GLV by GLNR. So this, sorry about sort of dumb notation, but sort of standard. So the general linear group in coefficients in R and dimension n is this object there. And you've seen it before. You may have seen it quite as abstract way, but this is just matrices, okay, invertible matrices. So how do we represent a linear function? If you give a basis of the vector space, or this is a finite dimensional vector space, the action of the linear transformation on that basis is given by a matrix, right? So if he's RN, you can send a baby you want, 1000, 2010. What I'm going to do then, F, so if F is in GLN, then F or EI is AI1, AIN. Each of these vectors gets sent to some vector. So these are separate vectors in RN. And you apply this mean of information, you get some vector. And we use this vector, so you should put the matrix A to be the matrix Aij, is the matrix representation of F. So linear function is basically a matrix.
Okay, but you know, matrix requires you to choose a base for your vector. Sometimes you don't want to do that. But if you're happy doing that, if you're happy choosing a basis for a vector space, for example this one, because it reminds basis for this vector space, a linear transformation is simply an N by M matrix. So linear transformation is your N by M matrix. What about bijective? Bijective, so if you remember from linear algebra, a linear transformation is invertible precisely when the determinant of the linear transformation is non-zero. So GLNR can also be seen as the set of N by N matrices with real entries and non-zero determinants. So the non-zero determinant condition is precisely what makes the matrix invertible. Learning linear algebra, all the invert matrices and all that. And if you go like N, you can take N equals 2. They're using this thing mostly as an example. Or that is an example of a group.
So I've been talking about this as a set. Right? I just told you. Here's a set of bijective linear functions on a vector space. But I haven't told you how to operate. So I want to make this thing into a group. It's supposed to be an example of a group. But the operation is this. So if you have two linear functions, you can compose them as functions. So this is, if you like, this is a subset of scheme B, right? Because I'm taking functions from B to B that are bijective. So this is A subset here. And so in particular, I know if I have two things here, I know how to compose them to get another element here. But the nice thing is, well, it's proved, but it's not so obvious, that if you compose two linear functions, so this thing is actually an example of a subgroup. Friday I'll come back to the notion of subgroups and define them precisely, but you probably have heard of subgroups before, and this is an example of subgroups. And the point about subgroups now is that it's disclosure, right? So when you're talking about subgroups here, if you have to check something in the subgroup, you have to take two elements in the subgroup and make sure that they're product is still there, and so you need to prove that the composition of two linear functions is linear, which you can prove by the definition is not high, or you can come here and say, well, matrices, what happens when you compose two linear functions? You multiply with the matrix, you multiply matrices. So matrix multiplication that you learn in linear algebra is meant to be composition of linear functions. So the operation
on the LNR is, can be seen as either function composition or distribution. It's the rest that, you know, matrix multiplication was not invented to torture undergraduates. It was invented to express the compositional functions in terms of the matrix. And so where are we? We have our set, we have the operation, and we'd like to sort the group. Now we know that this guy is a group. This is easy to check that it's a group. So all the properties, of the symmetric group on V is going to be inherited by that, as long as you pay attention to what you need to prove. So if you want to prove that this guy is a group, well, we need to show that it's associative, the operation is associative, but it already knows it's associative because it's associative here. The condition of associativity is assigned here on A. So as soon as you know that it's associative here, it becomes associative. Identity. So the identity function that stands x for x, has the property that if you compose that and use any function, you get the other one. So it has the right property. Except you need to check that the identity function is linear. So if you're going to prove that this guy is a group, you need to verify that the identity function is linear. You need to verify the identity function applied to lambda x plus mu I, which is lambda x plus mu I, by the way, is going to be equal to lambda identity applied to x plus mu identity applied to 1. To be clear that it is. And the identity matrix, that's why identity is the matrix with ones along the diagonal and zeros elsewhere. That's the matrix representation of the identity function. And inverses, so if you have a function that is a linear function that is bijective, then you need to verify that its inverse is also bijective. And suppose maybe I can do that.
I'm just mostly from here to get down and prove something. So let's check that if F is in the LV, then that inverse, which is an inverse as a function, is assumed to exist because I'm taking functions that are bijective, is in the so what we need to check? We need to check that F inverse has that property. So we need to check F inverse of lambda X with mu I is lambda I think why? Because we need to check. Now the question is bijective. So this guy here, so let me call this guy Z. So I'm taking the inverse of F. So what's the defining property of Z? Z is characterized by F f of g is lambda x to vy. Right? That's what f inverse of something is. And so, I'm telling you that something is bijective, but there's only one thing in the domain that maps to the guy in the image. So z is the one thing in the domain for which f of z is this. That's the definition of this lambda. Okay? So to prove that the left-hand side is equal to the right-hand side, it's an R to check that the right-hand side also has the property that when I apply F to the right-hand side, I get this. So let's check that. So how are we going to check that? Okay, so let's check. What is lambda has inverse of x? Y also has a problem. Okay, so let's see. Let's apply F to it and see what we get. F of lambda has inverse of x with mu. Bye-bye. F is a linear function. That's the assumption we were making, right? At the beginning, we're taking a function in GLP. So F of a linear combination is a linear combination of the values of F. So this is going to be F of F. So mu F of F. Okay? So at this point here, I use the fact that F is linear. So F of something times something plus something, something else times something else is the something times the something plus something else.
That's the definition of
linearity. Now I use the fact that f is f inverse is an inverse of f. So this guy here is just x, and this guy here is just y. So this thing here has the same property that z there has, namely that when I apply f, I get one that's from mu. So it has an e, because the function is not objective. So that's very hard to say. And it shows that the inverse of a linear function is also linear, which tells you that this thing is visible. No, I have 3 seconds. I want to say this one more thing that the real numbers don't, you know, get there, but they're not that important. What's important is that they form a field. So the normal rule is a very other type of algebraic structure, which you might have seen, is a set with two operations on addition and multiplication that has all the nice properties that you can add, subtract, multiply, and divide, so things that are not zero and so on. So, and it has all the properties of the real numbers. And you can, so anytime you have a field, you can make a vector space over that field. You don't need to, vector space doesn't have to be over the real numbers. The complex number, for example, is also a field. So you can add, multiply, subtract, divide complex numbers, all the rational numbers, and more interestingly, when t is a prime number, z mod tz is a field. So you can make vector spaces over this guy and get some interesting groups. And so there's lots of groups that you can get out of this construction of mini groups, and those are very important groups. So we'll be seeing more. Fair enough for the first day. Yes.
Oh, we're not going to worry about the units that are going to be in the
huh?
I'm going to worry about the units that are going to be in the
I assume that you've seen that before. So yeah, so he is asking, you know, when you first see this theory, if you look at the a lot of time proving that there is only one identity. Between the group, there's an identity beneath, and the inverse of an element is uniquely defined by the element and so on. Yeah, I went over that.
Anything else? Okay.
Oh, I remember I had that one. I didn't bring it here. Oh, look at probability. Oh my God.